Welcome to the Gila Members Community Radio's new program, Earth Matters. Earth Matters brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. We aim to inform, challenge, engage, and inspire our listeners. Three hosts alternate weekly shows to bring the listener a broad range of topics and expertise on environmental and conservation issues that affect us here in Grant County, around New Mexico, nationally, and globally. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. The Gila Resources Information Project, also known as GRIP, is a nonprofit environmental organization that works to promote community health by protecting our environment and natural resources here in Southwest New Mexico. Our guest today is Martha Schumann Cooper, Southwest New Mexico Field Representative for the Nature Conservancy. Martha has lived for 12 years in Southwest New Mexico. She's developed strong connections to both the landscape and the conservation community, and a particular fondness for the Gila. She spends a good part of her leisure and work hours hiking around the Gila and Members Rivers. Trained as a forest ecologist, Martha has immersed herself in learning about Southwest rivers. When not working for the Nature Conservancy as a landscape director, Martha spends time with her family, runs on trails with her striped and spotted dog, Tessa, bicycles, and backpacks into the Gila wilderness. Good morning, Martha, and welcome to Earth Matters.
Thanks. Good morning.
Today we're going to talk to Martha about TNC's work here in southwestern New Mexico, and we'll also spend some time discussing and updating everyone on the Arizona Water Settlements Act planning process, under which the state of New Mexico is contemplating doubling the withdrawals of water from the Gila River. So, Martha, let's start out by, if you could tell us a bit about the Nature Conservancy or TNC's work here in Southwest New Mexico and your role as a Southwest New Mexico field representative.
Sure. Well, the Nature Conservancy has worked in Southwest New Mexico for probably 20 to 25 years, and began working in the region and subsequently bought land in the Cliff Gila Valley. And now we have the Gila Riparian Preserve in along the Gila and the Members Riparian Preserve in Members. And just to back up, the Conservancy's mission is to protect land and water for people and nature. So a quarter of a century ago when the board of the Nature Conservancy of New Mexico started working in this region, they were really interested in protecting the biodiversity found in this area. And it's a particularly rich, biologically diverse area because of the overlap of the Arizona and New Mexico mountains, which come down from the north, and the Apache Highlands coming over from Arizona, and the Chihuahuan Desert. So we have the overlap of three ecoregions, and that, along with these riparian corridors, creates a lot of biodiversity. And that has been kind of the core purpose of the Conservancy over time, is to protect that.
And then in terms of what you do in particular.
Right. So the tools the Conservancy uses are they're numerous. So one, and the one they're most well known for, is purchasing land mm-hmm. and setting land aside as a nature preserve. And so that's part of my responsibility, is to be a steward of that land and undertake restoration projects. And of course, that involves working with partners. And for example, the Gila Conservation Education Center brings students out to do educational programs, or we partner with the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance to do restoration projects. So I work with a lot of different folks to help take care of the land and our preserves.
And you have two main preserves?
Two main preserves, right? And they are comprised of multiple tracts of land. So they're, okay, like in the Gila, we have some contiguous pieces up at the upper end of the valley by the Box Canyon Campground, and then we have the piece down in Riverside, the Iron Bridge Tract. And we have another piece that we own that was actually purchased with mitigation funding for Southwestern Willow Flycatcher, and that's in the middle of the valley.
Okay, and then you also have the Gila River Farm and the Lichty Center there.
Right, so that's at the downstream end of the upper tract, and okay, the Gila River Farm was purchased in about 2000, and it was kind of designed to be kind of a working agricultural farm and landscape. It has been that at various points in time. I'm always open and looking for agricultural partners who share our conservation values, because we do have great land and water available for farming. Sounds like a promotional piece. And also at the Gila River Farm is the Licti Ecological Research Center, and that's a facility that was set up to really support conservation research and conservation partners working on Gila issues. And so we have a number of folks. Right now, there are fish researchers from UNM and Kansas State University who come nearly quarterly to sample non-native and native fish. They're trying to understand the interactions of those fishes, and other researchers come and use the facility.
And so, what about the Mimbres Preserve?
Mm-hmm. So the Mimbres Preserve is, there aren't any structures on the preserve. There's an upper and lower preserve. One is north of 152 and one is south down by San Juan. And folks use those preserves to go hiking. They were purchased to protect habitat for the Chihuahuan chub, which is an endemic, a fish that's endemic to the Mimbres River, meaning it doesn't live anywhere else in the United States. And it was discovered, I believe, in the 70s by a high school biology teacher who was out doing surveys, and people thought it no longer existed in the Mimbres. So there's a small population hanging on there, supported also by recovery efforts. So they also live in a hatchery, and the population is supplemented with hatchery fish sometimes. And then the other species is the Chiricahua leopard frog, and so there's a great habitat in a spring there. Mm-hmm. So we have for some reason that population is more able to survive with chytrid fungus, which is one of the largest threats to Chiricahua leopard frog. So, and we also in the Mimbres, our work in southwest New Mexico kind of follows the trajectory of conservation biology in the last maybe 30 years, which was initially people were very species specific, like let's protect habitat for one species and let's protect elephants. And, you know, people picked a species and then maybe the habitat around it. But then we realized that we couldn't focus on just one stretch of the river and the valley. We needed to think at the watershed scale. And so that's expanded our work. So in both watersheds, we work a lot with the Gila National Forest. In the Mimbres, we are ranch partner. We have a ranch partnership, and we actually hold grazing allotments in the Upper Mimbres watershed. And our goal there was really to work with the National Forest to support their interest in getting fire on the landscape and returning low-intensity fire to the forest in order to avoid large-intensity stand replacing fire, which would have downstream effects on the species we're trying to protect. So that ranch partnership's been in place for 11 years, and we're continuing to work with the Forest Service on updating a planning document that allows them to continue doing prescribed burning and restoration in the upper watershed. So similarly, I work with the Gila when I can, when there are opportunities to support their work with fire restoration in the upper Gila watershed as well.
So Martha, you're a lucky person that you and your family that you are able to live out at TNC's Licti Center, Ecological Research Center, mm-hmm. and really experience on a day-to-day basis, the river's cycle, mm-hmm. and through the seasons, and really, you know, experience that agricultural community out there, and really how humans live with the river, mm-hmm. right? And the balance that really is out there. And so maybe you can explain, in your opinion, why is the Gila River such a special place?
Well, I think probably a lot of listeners are familiar with the phrase, the Gila's the last free-flowing river in New Mexico. And I really struggle with trying to describe to people why that's so important. But by free flowing, we mean that the river still floods. It still has droughts. It's not impounded by a major dam. There are agricultural diversions, but they wash out at large floods. And so this variability in the hydrograph, which is how the peaks and the low points of the river, they really create the diversity that the Gila supports. And so just something I've become more familiar with And the way I think about it is I walk around out on the floodplain a lot, and there are lots of overflow channels. There are lots of little tiny wetland pockets. There are stands of tiny cottonwoods coming up. There are willows, you know, huge stands, new emerging stands. And so there's this multi-age stand. There's a really diverse just structure to the place, vegetationally, but also just the topography. And that's what floods create. And then they also maintain it by sending water across the floodplain and maintaining that vegetation. And all of that supports incredible habitat for wildlife. So especially birds, the Gila hosts over 350 species of birds, I think, and one of the largest populations of southwestern willow flycatcher, which is an endangered bird, and a great population of common blackhawk, which I love seeing and hearing every summer. They're found throughout the valley. So yeah, the Gila's an amazing place to kind of get to know and see how the natural hydrologic regime really creates and supports this biodiversity.
And fish too, right?
Oh, certainly, definitely. And I'm not a fish biologist, but I've had the good fortune of going out with folks from Game and Fish and the Gila and the Fish and Wildlife Service, who are part of a project that's been sampling the Gila for 22 years, I believe, at the same, I'm not sure how many sites, maybe 12 or 15 sites. And so the Gila, I've become a little more familiar with some of the fish, but we still have I think nearly our entire complement of native fishes, with the exception of round-tailed chub, I think.
Right, and I think the factoid is the most intact native fish community in the lower Colorado River Basin, which is pretty impressive.
And I think the best, I don't know how to say this, but the sort of the largest community of spike dace and loach minnow. I mean, the Gila is a really important site for those two endangered fish.
Right.
And
I
of
think
course
the largest in New Mexico for spike dace is in the Cliff Gila Valley. Mm-hmm. And I think the largest in Arizona is Aravaipa Creek.
Mm-hmm. Which is also partly owned and managed by the Nature Conservancy.
Right. That's right.
So, yeah, and there are lots of threats to native fishes as well. Non-native fishes, agriculture, or dewatering of the river by agricultural diversion, drought. I think it's really interesting to try and understand the dynamics of how the native and non-native fishes interact. So when the river floods, it actually benefits the native fish because it knocks back the competition and predation by the non-natives. But during periods of drought, you have fish kind of stranded in smaller pools of water, and that's when the non-natives really take a whack at the natives. And so the take-home message is it's good to keep water in the river for
surprise,
the fish.
Surprise.
I know. Yeah.
Thanks, Martha. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and we're talking today to Martha Schumann Cooper, Southwest New Mexico Field Representative for the Nature Conservancy. And Martha, you mentioned in our previous segment that the Gila River is New Mexico's last free-flowing river. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about what are the threats to our last free-flowing mm-hmm. river, because it's not like in this perfect state, and mm-hmm. So we're very concerned, right? Maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
And I think I'll just start by explaining the context in which the Conservancy thinks about our conservation work, which is we go through this planning process called a Conservation Action Plan. And in that process, we look at what are our targets. And so in this case, we thought about the riparian vegetation along the Gila. We thought about the aquatic species in the Gila. I thought about the upper watershed. And then we go through the process of looking at what are the threats to those systems and rank those threats. And we certainly think that the Arizona Water Settlement Act presents, and the corresponding potential for a diversion, permanent diversion on the Gila, present the largest threat to the Gila River and our enormous investment in protecting habitat along the Gila for a number of species. So other threats, though, include dewatering of the river from irrigation, agricultural diversion for irrigation. And by that I mean that certainly folks have water rights on the Gila to irrigate, as do we. We're water right holders on two of the ditches. But the river is actually going dry for several miles at a stretch. Usually in the spring when it's dry, it usually happens during dry springs, but it's also pretty dry this fall because we had such a weak monsoon season. So
what did we, I think we looked at the USGS data the other day, was the lowest flow since 1957.
Right, and everyone knows about the 1950s droughts as being, right. 1950s drought being really significant. So that's kind of sobering, and that's something I notice a lot just spending, now that I live out in the Gila and walk around. The stretch where the Gila River Farm is located is directly, well, not directly, but downstream to the two major diversions at the upper end of the valley. So that's the reach that's most impacted. So that's a threat. I mentioned some of the other threats, like non-native species. In this case, I'm thinking mostly of non-native fish, because we have very little non-native vegetation. We do have some Russian olive and some tree of heaven, but we don't have...
No tamarisk, really.
Really isolated individuals, really. I would say the problem so many land management agencies and individuals have managing rivers in the Southwest is that the rivers are choked by salt cedar, and that can be pretty directly linked to the change in the hydrologic regime. And so the flooding and the drought that we have, the native species are really adapted to thrive under those conditions.
Right. So isn't that great that we've got one threat given our nice healthy flow regime on the Gila? That's one less threat that we have to really worry about in terms of these non-native trees like the Rio Grande or even the Gila actually around Safford.
That's right, downstream.
It's pretty bad.
Pretty much solid salt cedar. So another threat that's still exists but isn't quite as widespread is I guess overgrazing, year-round grazing in the riparian corridor. So I only have a memory of the Gila that goes back about 8 years, but other folks have a longer memory that goes back about 20 years ago, when the river was really barren in a lot of areas because of year-round grazing. And so upstream of Highway 211, there's very little grazing. And then downstream, there's seasonal grazing, and farther downstream, there is still some pretty intense grazing pressure. So that's an ongoing, I guess, consideration in terms of maintaining habitat. When the grazing pressure is managed, then riparian species can regenerate and grow, and that provides the habitat for the species I've been talking about. It also provides other services to people, such as attenuating floods. Riparian vegetation is great for slowing flood water down and helping it infiltrate, which recharges the shallow aquifer, which in turn provides water at when the river is really low. It kind of feeds the river at those lower flows. So maintaining riparian vegetation along the river is certainly important.
What about climate change? Is TNC working on climate change in the context of the Gila?
They are more in terms of regional planning. So we've had the New Mexico chapter actually had the first climate change program of the Nature Conservancy, I think, starting about 5 years ago. And the focus has really been on trying to understand potential impacts and then look at how to mitigate those impacts. And what's interesting to me is that sort of when we talk about the Gila, it all feeds back into maintaining the natural flow regime in this corridor. Because if you have a healthy riparian area, then you have the capacity to absorb floods, to withstand drought. I mean, that riparian vegetation will provide shade, and there will be less evapotranspiration when the sun is hot. We do expect that the climate will be warmer and that weather events will be more, extreme, I guess, in terms of droughts and floods.
And so, I think Dr. Gutzler, the climatologist up at UNM, he presented at the Gila River Festival a few years ago, and I think some of his modeled predictions are that the Gila will cease to be a snowpack-fed river, right, by the end of the century. So what does that, I guess, mean for base flow in the Gila over the long term?
Right. Because we're pretty used to getting a nice slug of water in the spring from the snowpack.
Right. Yeah. So,
Well, I shouldn't say we're used to it because we haven't had it the last couple of winters.
That's right. That's
but,
true. That's
but historically,
true.
People
historically.
Are accustomed to that.
And so, you know, TNC has been in the valley since, I guess, the 80s. And, you know, you've been doing a lot of work out in the Cliff Gila Valley in terms of restoration work. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the restoration work that you've done and also some of the other things that you're working on to protect the Gila, additional land acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I think about restoration, I kind of think about passive restoration and active restoration. And so passive restoration would be, an example of that would be purchasing a piece of land that has been overgrazed and is pretty barren and removing the threats, which are typically cows, horses, vehicles, and just letting the riparian vegetation grow. And so the Iron Bridge Tract is a great example of how successful that is. It's very inspiring to see the transformation over time. And that's a site where I've actually been able to watch the change because the upstream properties have kind of already gone through that change prior to my working down here. But we, a couple of years ago, we received funding through the River Ecosystem Restoration Initiative program through the Environment Department. And we actually applied to purchase some land, but those projects ended up falling through. And so we did some restoration work and focused on restoring some floodplain grasslands and removing the limited non-natives that we have on our properties and planting some native trees to replace the non-natives. I'm trying to think if that's everything. It felt like it was such an enormous project. I would have to say we had the opportunity to really work with Trish Hurley and Mark Cantrell with Lone Mountain Natives who grow native plants, and we did some seeding in our floodplain grasslands, which are dry, so we can't irrigate them. It's pretty hard to get stuff established, and we ended up also planting grasses that were grown in 4-foot-long tall pots. And so I was just looking at those last night. They've done really well. And so we did a kind of a combination of plantings, and that was kind of a great lesson for us. Some of the species in the floodplain, the native species, have been, you know, diminished over time just from the intense grazing. And so we have, because our focus is not agricultural production, we have the opportunity to let some of our fields along the margins of the river be floodplain grasslands, which provide habitat for birds, sandhill cranes right now, and also just our place where floods can spread out when they occur.
Have the sandhill cranes come back yet?
Oh, they have. They came actually, they started coming back in September.
They did, okay.
So it's always a wonderful sound to hear them in the morning. And there's a pond, and shortly after the Conservancy acquired the Gila River Farm, they received funding from the Environment Department and the 319 grant to construct a wetland. So the wetland at the Gila River Farm is fed from an irrigation ditch, and we spent a lot of time reallocating our water rights from, you know, being designated for crops to being designated for this wetland. And so the wetland supports ducks and waterfowl in the winter, and has created some great habitat. You can hear flycatchers there and yellow-billed cuckoos, and it's pretty amazing because, once again, if you just add water, wetland vegetation appears. And so the other feature we have at the farm is an old pond it's a big pond that was built in the 50s. And so during the winter, if you go out at dusk, you just hear hundreds of ducks come, like, flying in and catapulting down onto the water. So that's a really great sound, too, and sight. This time of year.
So as a sidebar to all those birders out there, people can visit the Gila River Farm.
They
can.
That's
right. And
all of our preserves are open to the public, and especially to foot traffic. So folks can park at the Lickety Ecological Research Center. There's a parking lot, and they can walk down to the pond or over to the river or out to the wetland. And same with the Iron Bridge. There's a small parking area on either side of the old Iron Bridge.
So. And you have a beaver dam, right?
We do. Well, there's a brand new one starting at the Iron Bridge. And then there's a big beaver complex up on the Gila River Farm. It's kind of, it's not clear if it's on, some of it's on our property and some of it is on the neighbor's property across the river. And it's actually, it's an interesting situation. It's fed by irrigation tailwater. So the Fort West Ditch takes kind of the other half of the river after the Upper Gila Ditch takes their half. And they can't quite squeeze it all into the ditch. And so they kick some back to the river and that creates a wetland, which is actually dry right now because there's no extra water. But when there is extra water, it's an amazing wetland, and the beavers manage to relocate when they need to. So, but that's a great, it's a really kind of big beaver complex, and it's fun to walk around there, especially when it's wet.
Great. So. Great. Well, and what about land acquisitions? Are you doing any more acquisitions?
We are. I mean, we're always looking for opportunities to protect more habitat. And of course, we work only with willing sellers, folks who are interested and willing in selling their land. And so right now we have a proposal into the natural resource damage, what are they called?
The Office of the Natural Resource Trustees
of New Mexico, who are settling a damage claim with Freeport MacMoran. And so we don't know if there will be funding to pursue those projects. And in my time, we've typically needed to rely on public funding in some form to protect land. And so just because land is so expensive, but we're always looking for opportunities.
And so those potential parcels would, if they were to go through under the damage claim settlement, mm-hmm. would just help with restoration efforts? Would you be doing passive?
It would be a combination of both, because there are three properties, two in the valley and one down in Red Rock, and they're all kind of slightly different. So the one in Red Rock would just be passive restoration. It's all floodplain habitat right in the river. So just fencing out cows would allow regeneration of native species. Okay. And then one in the Cliff Gila Valley is mostly agricultural, and so that would be an opportunity to create a wetland like we did at the farm. And then the other one actually has some great existing riparian vegetation because it hasn't been grazed. It's in that stretch of the river that no longer is grazed by folks because, well, it's hard to fence out land along a river, and we are a fence out state, so it's up to landowners to keep their fences out unless a whole community decides to respect not putting their cows in the river. So in that case, the river, the riparian vegetation is existing, is really diverse and great, and there's some adjacent agricultural fields that could be also converted to more wetland habitat. So, and I just want to explain that historically, if you look at maps of the Gila River, it took up a lot of space. It had meanders, it had a broad floodplain. That's been constricted, especially during the 50s when levees were built. It's kind of expanded in points, and its meanders have, you know, grown again, and the levees have washed away. But we're still regaining wetland habitat. I mean, we don't know how much there historically was, but certainly a lot more than we have now. And so that's the idea, is that we're creating habitat that is missing. And the Gila certainly is an amazing system, but to think of it as pristine would be really not accurate. It's sort of still recovering and increasing in diversity and structure and that kind of thing.
Great. So we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and we're talking today to Martha Schumann Cooper, Southwest New Mexico Field Representative for the Nature Conservancy. And we're going to shift gears now and talk about the Arizona Water Settlements Act, or AWSA. And let me start by starting out with a little disclaimer here and explaining to our listeners that my organization, the Gila Resources Information Project, has partnered with the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and the Center for Biological Diversity as the Gila Conservation Coalition, and otherwise known as GCC. And we work to protect the free flow of the Gila and San Francisco rivers and the wilderness characteristics of the Gila and Aldo Leopold wilderness areas. So I wear two hats. I'm not only the director of GRIP, but I'm also the director of the Gila Conservation Coalition. And Martha and I both serve on the stakeholders input group under the Arizona Water Settlements Act planning process. What we wanted to do today is just start out first and make sure that everyone knows what the AWSA is and how it works, because it's pretty complicated. And then we'll talk about the planning process and what this, what the AWSA means for the Gila River. Let me start out by describing the Arizona Water Settlements Act. And as many of you know, this is a congressionally approved water bill that settles Indian water rights claims in Arizona. It provides New Mexico with $66 million in non-reimbursable expenditures that could be used by the state to meet water supply demands in the Southwest planning region of New Mexico. This includes Catron, Luna, Hidalgo, and Grant counties. Either through the construction of a water development project, or it could be projects, that would increase water used from the Gila River by up to 14,000 acre feet per year. Or the state could choose to use this funding to develop non-diversion water projects or projects that won't use Gila River water. So New Mexico receives a guaranteed $6.6 million a year for 10 years. So that makes up the $66 million. And that begins in 2012. And in addition, New Mexico could receive an additional $34 to $62 million if it chooses to construct what's being called a New Mexico unit, so to use the 14,000 acre feet of water. And by the end of December 2014, the state has to identify or tell the Secretary of Interior if it's going to use Gila River water or not. So that's sort of the context. That's a quick summary. People can go to the Gila Conservation Coalition website if they're interested in getting more information on how the AWSA works. But Martha, stakeholders in southwestern New Mexico have been meeting since 2007, really, to develop AWSA project proposals to figure out how to cost-effectively balance water supply and demand in the region while at the same time protecting the river. And so we had 70-some-odd projects that were originally submitted, and it's been whittled down. Where are we now in this stakeholder planning process and since 2007?
Yeah, so in the last year, the Interstate Stream Commission kind of started managing the process they developed a selection criteria and a process for vetting those 70 projects. And so there was a tier one process and a tier two process, and now projects have gone through the tier two process and they are being evaluated. Some of them are receiving funding to further develop their proposal or to collect more information about what it would take to implement them and whether they're feasible. Are we at 17 projects now?
Más o menos. I think some of them kind of merge, or
and some of them are really just about studies and not about projects, so it's hard to tell, but people can go to nmawsa.org for more information about the projects and the process as well. So the ISC is convening meetings quarterly with the public and with the stakeholder input group,
and we said ISC is Interstate Stream Commission.
Right, okay. So they're the agency that is the lead, and they're designated in the Arizona Water Settlement Act as the lead agency to implement the act. So they're holding meetings, and they convened a stakeholder group that is made up of representatives of different sectors, so conservation, business, agriculture, ranching, municipalities, I may be missing someone.
Counties. And conservation groups.
So we are able to provide feedback to the information that is presented to us by the Interstate Stream Commission at quarterly meetings.
So we've got two diversion projects now, and all the rest are non-diversion projects. And
I think it's important for folks to understand, just because this is a misconception, that the water that could be used from the Arizona Water Settlement Act for a New Mexico unit is leased from the Central Arizona Project, meaning that there's an annual fee for that water. It's not free water. It's exchange water. It's water in exchange for cap water for folks in Arizona. So it's actually quite expensive. And so people have developed diversion projects. They're pretty conceptual at this point. The users right now have been agricultural. It's not really clear how irrigators could afford to divert and use this water, but they have identified that they perceive a need for it and so are interested in exploring what it would take to access it and use it. And assumably would be exploring how they could pay for it.
So the process has, over the last number of years, is, and I think it's also important for people to realize that most of the projects coming from the four counties of southwestern New Mexico are non-diversion alternatives. We had, 70 initially. We're now sort of whittled down to, as you said, 16 or 17. But the majority are non-diversion alternatives. So we're talking about what's the sort of range of non-diversion alternatives we're talking about now?
Well, just some examples. Folks are thinking about, I think, the town of Silver City with the mining district is thinking about creating a water block system, I think it's called, that would kind of fix some of the inefficiencies in how water is delivered, as well as address some of the water treatment plant needs, and I think the potential to get credit for just not, the words aren't coming to me, for infiltration of the wastewater back into
the water reuse.
Thank you.
So they're going to apply for 750 acre feet of return flow credit from the wastewater treatment plant, Silver City wastewater treatment plant, and then be able to withdraw that equivalent amount from a new well field at the Grant County Airport. Okay. And that would supply Hurley and the mining district, okay, is my understanding.
And so, and my understanding is the town of Silver City has spent a significant amount of resources trying to understand its water needs, and knows that Silver City sits on a large aquifer that is recharged from snowpack in the mountains. And so using groundwater is actually a sustainable solution for the town of Silver City and area communities. And then I've learned most of this from you, but Deming has done great work in trying to address its water needs, its long-term water needs, by purchasing agricultural water rights and retiring some of them and kind of holding those for future use. And so,
right, and that's their plan, and their 40-year water plan is that's their strategy, is to buy up these farms that are being retired and just transfer water rights from ag to municipal use. And along with municipal conservation, their consultants feel that they can meet their 40-year demand. But yet, Martha, they did submit a diversion project, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happened with
that?
But
I think they, at this time, have kind of withdrawn it just because they can't make sense of the extraordinary cost it would take to divert the water on top of not actually having a need, which is something I return to again and again in trying to evaluate how we might use this opportunity. Is the Arizona Water Settlement Act is a great opportunity to meet water supply needs in the four-county region, and those needs can probably be met most cost-effectively by non-diversion alternatives.
And Martha, $66 million is a lot of money to spend on these water supply demand non-diversion alternatives. We don't need to pay that money back, right?
Correct. So that's a great opportunity for communities in this region to address some of their water supply needs with infrastructure, with fixing leaks, with looking at where the inefficiencies in their systems are and addressing those. And communities in New Mexico have gone a long way, like Santa Fe and Albuquerque, in addressing their water needs by focusing on water conservation efforts. So when I lived in Santa Fe, we were only allowed to water on certain days at certain times, and the city gave away low-flow toilets. And there was a real education effort with the community about living in a high desert system.
Right, and the town right now has a contract with Daniel B. Stevens and Associates, and they're doing a water audit and as part of a water conservation plan to try and figure out what are the biggest bangs for the buck, so to speak, in terms of water conservation that the town could pursue and implement and really help us save it. I think some of the economics work that the Gila Conservation Coalition has done, we contracted with Eco Northwest. We looked at a range of water conservation measures, from things you can do in the home as well as outside the home, and could extend the life of the town's water supply as well as the other municipalities we've looked at, but at fraction of the cost of high cost diversion, pumping, storage, giant, huge pipelines.
Well, and it's also, I think, helpful to think in the context of what's the water use in the four county area. And the vast majority of water use in the four county area is agricultural and mining. And so it might be necessary in the future to move some of that to municipalities. Certainly that's happened with mining, as water needs have diminished over time with different technology, and certainly some of the water use for agriculture could be switched to not necessarily drip in the valley, but to different uses. So I imagine that we can meet our long-term water needs through a lot of creativity and probably managing it a little more closely than we have been, because in the Gila Valley compared to the Mimbres Valley, there's a lot of water. And so Right. People use it liberally. I mean, it's kind of that thing where if you have a lot of money, people don't pay a lot of attention to a dollar here or there. People have a lot of water. You can irrigate a lot.
Right. So what are some of the projects that the irrigators are proposing in terms of non-diversion alternatives?
Gosh, I'm trying to think of what they are.
There's like the fixing some of the ditches. So
maybe the
Pleasanton ditch.
Oh, and right.
Luna ditch.
Right. So those are both in the San Francisco watershed, I believe. And there are some ditch irrigation efficiency measures, like lining a ditch or fixing diversions, that have been proposed. And I think proposals are actually posted on the website.
That's
so
right.
If folks are particularly interested in looking at them, they can go to that nmawsa.org website.
So it also seems like these non-diversion alternatives, there are a bunch of smaller projects throughout the four county region that really will benefit, that address the real needs of people. They're coming from water users themselves, and they're spread out around the four counties. And, you know, the intent of, you know, the AWSA, at least in the context of New Mexico, is to benefit the four county region of southwestern New Mexico. So does it seem like, you know, these projects, you know, if these non-diversion projects really are, you know, spread out, are they meeting needs across the four counties?
They are, and I think that it will be it's a very equitable approach. And I think if it comes to pass that a diversion is not feasible, that the Interstate Stream Commission could probably even make more of an effort to do outreach to smaller communities and irrigators and folks who haven't been able to put in that intense amount of time to know about the opportunity or know how to put together a proposal. The municipalities, I think, are, because they provide water to people and have that responsibility, it seems to me, have invested a lot of money and time over the years in understanding their water needs and future water needs. And I guess I have a lot of confidence in that they have put a lot of thought into how they might meet them through these non-diversion alternatives.
Great. We'll take a short break. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and we're talking today to Martha Schumann Cooper, Southwest New Mexico Field Representative for the Nature Conservancy. And we're talking about the Arizona Water Settlements Act, under which the state of New Mexico is contemplating doubling the current withdrawals of water from the Gila River, which could have serious impacts to New Mexico's last free-flowing river. And so, Martha, let's go back to the diversion alternatives. And what are the diversion alternatives that are on the table right now? I think it's really only two projects.
Is that right? One from the Gila Basin Irrigation Commission that would propose a diversion in the upper end of the Cliff Gila Valley, and one from Hidalgo County that would also divert water in the Cliff Gila Valley. And I'm not quite sure how it would benefit folks in Hidalgo County. I don't quite understand that, and I haven't read the proposal recently.
I think that is an example of where the end water user, the need, hasn't really been identified. I think the proposal says whoever may need the water or want the water is the proposal.
Okay.
So divert, impound, store the water, but it's not really laid out who would get it is my understanding.
It's an interesting situation. Mary Reese, who's the lead from the Bureau of Reclamation, who's an agency working with the ISC at the request of the ISC to help with the planning process about implementing the Arizona Water Settlement Act, has said this is unique because it is an opportunity, but it's not a need-based project. And so I keep returning to that because it seems a little illogical. But we are presented with an opportunity, and we have to decide how to use it.
We sort of have two kind of projects, right? We've got the big diversion impoundment with a huge amount of water, but then maybe, and I think some of the alternatives that the Bureau of Reclamation is going to be analyzing are anything in the area of 5,000 acre feet of diversion and storage up to 14,000 acre feet. So we're looking really at a range, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the big giant diversion, and then we've got maybe something smaller that maybe meets agricultural needs. Is that kind of a fair way to
describe them? That's my understanding. And my understanding is that the Bureau of Reclamation will be designing a diversion and a project for the Interstate Stream Commission to evaluate. And I think the Interstate Stream Commission, as well as the irrigators, just feel really strongly that there's a need to capture this water and keep it in New Mexico. Of course, it is in New Mexico and travels down the river and has benefits, but keep it and put it to other uses besides for the river. And so I think the Bureau and the Bureau of Reclamation and ISC will be looking at any possible way to keep that water, whether it's one large impoundment or multiple ones. And
so what does it really look like? Let's maybe try and describe what these diversions and storage facilities might look like. And we should say that at this point, there is no end user defined, right?
Right.
So really what we're talking about is diversion, storage, and conveyance to that storage, but we're not talking at this point about conveyance to anywhere. That has not been identified.
Right, we don't know if it's going to stay in the valley, if it would be going to, I don't know, Las Cruces? I mean, I don't know where the need is.
El Paso?
Right. So
yeah.
I don't, it's hard because it's been so abstract. It's hard to really imagine what it would look like.
So we're talking diversion up around Mogollon Creek, the confluence between Mogollon Creek and the Gila, to an impoundment at the upper, middle, or lower parts of the river. So large impoundment, so could be Schoolhouse Canyon. Some of the alternatives, right?
That are the storing it in the canyons, yeah.
So Bear Creek, Schoolhouse, Mongoose. And then the other smaller scale project is storage ponds, right? Is that right?
Throughout the valley.
Throughout the valley.
And that's what Craig Repke from the Interstate Stream Commission presented last week at the Gila Natural History Symposium, where storage ponds sprinkled throughout the valley. So, which are great for harboring non-native fish, apparently. But, you know, it's interesting to me because I, as an, the Conservancy is a water right holder, and I'm very interested in, the, in protecting or keep the water rights in, of water right holders in the Valley. And I don't think that it's really been explored how this could either benefit or actually harm the irrigators who divert year-round. And the Arizona Water Settlement Act is very clear about only diverting water during the winter. There are all these restrictions on when water could be diverted. And so it could only be diverted in the winter when it wouldn't impact irrigators. But of course, irrigators in the valley are irrigating year-round. So assumably it would impact them, for example. I think the other thing we know from the Act is that the state can only divert 350 CFS per day. And so to say, well, we're just going to be taking a little bit off the big floods, well, we can. The state can only take 350 CFS per day, so it would make sense to take it at every opportunity they can. It doesn't flood at, you know, 10,000 CFS very often. You know, every what, 5 to 10 years? I don't have all the flood intervals at my fingertips, but
very infrequently.
Large floods are very infrequent, so they would be diverting water from small, moderate, kind of elevated flow levels.
And in your TNC's work and research, because you guys are doing a lot of research with partners out in the valley, what really are the ecological implications of taking water from these small and moderate size floods? What does that really do? What are we talking about here in terms of the ecological impacts?
I think I might have just said this, but they are the most frequent flows. They're the smallest flows. And so they are the flows that recharge the floodplain, that spread across the floodplain through these overflow channels and sustain, regenerate and sustain the riparian vegetation that's there. So I imagine when I think imagine a future with a diversion, it's actually a constriction of the riparian corridor because there simply wouldn't be as much water flowing across the floodplain and also recharging the shallow aquifer. But one of the things the Conservancy is really excited about is that we received funding from the Bureau of Reclamation's Desert LCC program, which is the Desert Landscape Conservation Cooperative. These landscape conservation cooperatives are actually regional partnerships throughout the U.S., and so in this case, it's, and maybe all of them, it's getting agencies like the Bureau of Reclamation to work with the Fish and Wildlife Service to address information needs collaboratively. So we received funding for a project, and I'll just read the title and then kind of parse it out, but it's Defining Ecosystem Water Needs and Assessing Impacts of Climate Change and Water Diversion on Riparian and Aquatic Species and Ecosystems of the Upper Gila Valley in New Mexico. And so the purpose of it really will be to work with a number of academic partners to look at the riparian and aquatic species in the valley and what their water needs are. They persist now, and so assumably their water needs are being mostly met. We can look at how they might be impacted in these stretches that are dewatered. And then also just understand with altering the hydrograph with a diversion or with climate change scenarios, what the future might look like, just so we can get a much better understanding about the projected impacts of a diversion and climate change, which can be evaluated individually or on top of one another, because the two of them together could really change the ecosystem of the Gila. And the Nature Conservancy has had a project for a couple of years now through the Game and Fish Department that has been monitoring groundwater and monitoring groundwater levels through monitoring wells and associated transects in the valley. And so that kind of data will feed into our project, along with a lot of other data like the fish data I mentioned earlier. And so we ourselves don't have enough information, but tapping into folks working on the Gila from other areas, we can really try and get a better understanding of what the impacts might be.
And that is going to inform as well the AWSA planning process, right, and the evaluation of the diversion alternatives?
Right. I mean, because the state has, the Interstate Stream Commission is using some of the funding that's available to do studies and work with consultants, and we have been talking with the Interstate Stream Commission about how we might work cooperatively to increase our knowledge as opposed to be duplicative. And so, yes, the Interstate Stream Commission is really interested in understanding the potential impacts, because they may or may not make a diversion feasible, or it may need to be designed to accommodate.
And is it the ESA that is the principal hurdle?
It is, although I think I've also heard from the Fish and Wildlife Service it's endangered species, but they're actually charged with managing habitat for all species. And so, of course, there's a legal handle with endangered species, but the Fish and Wildlife Service is concerned with a number of other species as well.
So if people would like more information on the work that you're doing in general, as well as under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, where can we direct them for more information?
They can look at two different websites. One is the Conservancy's main website, which is nature.org, and then go to the New Mexico page, and then there are a bunch of different tabs for the New Mexico page. And the other website is nmconservation.org, and so that's a website of the Nature Conservancy in New Mexico, and it's a place we post documents that we create related to different projects, and so they could also go to that website. And also folks can feel free to contact me.
Okay, and your number?
My number is 535-4417, and my email is mschumann@tnc.org.
Okay, and then also, I think we said this previously, but the AWSA planning process also has a website, and all of the work products from that process are posted, and that's nmawsa.org. And also the Gila Conservation Coalition, some of our studies, and also we've got posted all of the historical stuff from the Arizona Water Settlements Act planning process as well at gilaconservation.org. Well, Martha, I want to thank you very much for being here today with us and explaining to us TNC's work and also what's going on under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. Thanks.
Well, thanks, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and appreciate this Earth Matters program.
Yes, and thank you very much for all the work you do, because you guys are doing terrific work, and you know, we're just so lucky to have the Gila and Mimbres Preserves, and really, TNC's been doing amazing things to preserve what we've got of the last free-flowing river in New Mexico. So thank you so much for your hard work.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us today on Earth Matters.